The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey everyone, I'm JJ Stankovitz, and welcome into another edition of the Under Center Podcast, brought to you by St. Xavier University. On this episode, Cam Ellis and myself look ahead to the Bears' Week 3 matchup against the Atlanta Falcons, and also I'm joined by longtime sports writer Fred Mitchell to reflect on the life and legacy of Gale Sayers. All that and more on the Under Center Podcast, starting right now.
What does it mean to be a Chicago Bear? It means rich tradition. Black and blue division, defense.
I think it's the one franchise that when you think about them, being a defensive player myself, I think that's the first thing you go to.
Legends, linebackers, defensive linemen, dominant players.
The history of it. I mean, I'm a big history guy, so understanding this was one of the first franchises just kind of blows my mind, honestly, that I was able to be a part of that.
I mean, what more can you say?
All right, Cam, I want to start the podcast here before we get into anything involving the Bears-Falcons game this weekend. David Montgomery and Cordarrelle Patterson both talked to us in the media on Thursday regarding the grand jury decision to not criminally charge any of the police officers involved in the shooting and killing of Breonna Taylor. And I want to play what they both had to say, but before I do, I think it was clear with David Montgomery, who you're going to hear from first, just the anguish and the frustration in his voice and in his answer over this, and his fear, his genuine fear, something that, Cam, neither you or I can ever understand as two white people in this country. Before we play it, did you have any impressions of what these two guys had to say today?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just you saw the burden that they feel even to have to publicly speak about it. Among the infinite amount of burdens they must already feel, that professional athletes are sort of having to rise to the occasion here and be the ones that so frequently and publicly speak about these issues and these injustices. I felt the sort of tiredness of it all today. Mm-hmm. And you felt the sort of, I think burden is a good word, because both David Montgomery and Cordarrelle Patterson both just sort of looked so and sounded so fatigued by it all.
Yeah, which is obviously, you know, completely understandable. But I think, you know, they both do realize the platform that they have. And I know that's such an overused word nowadays, but so many white people in this country don't have any black people in their circle. And to hear it from the guys they're watching play football on Sunday, I think does make somewhat of an impact. Mm-hmm. You know, to see David Montgomery, whoever, you know, we're all writing about a great of a start to the season he's having. And I wrote about that on NBCSportsChicago.com on Thursday about the run game identity. And just to see these players as humans and to essentially give people the opportunity to hear from a black person about what it's like. You wish that the burden wasn't on them because you wish more people had black people in their circle. Unfortunately, that's kind of where we are right now. So with that, here's what David Montgomery and Cordarrelle Patterson had to say. So starting with David Montgomery and then going on to Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah, we haven't really discussed it. It's still pretty sensitive. It's a sensitive topic for the team and for me, myself. But, you know, it sucks. You know, the verdict. And, you know, it just sucks, man. Just being able to be who I am and being scared to be who I am just because of the color of my skin, and you know, being having to go out here every day of my life and fearing if I was to get pulled over by a cop or if anything was happening to me, I don't know if it's my last breath that I'd be taking. So it sucks, it's scary, but you know, we just got to keep fighting and keep challenging those who need to be challenged so that we can get it fixed and changed for the better of the future.
So my son, my girlfriend, she's white, you know, so my kids is mixed, you know, but I'm fully black. So, you know, my kids think they fully black. So they don't see color, they kids, you know what I'm saying? They don't see color. They just see happiness and they see sadness. So as my kid come to me asking, like, why is this going on? Like, first thing he said was like, I thought Dr. Martin Luther King fixed all this and stuff. Like, how do you even know stuff like this, dude? Like, the kid's so smart, man. They pick up on everything. So it's like, what we trying to tell them is stuff they already know because they catch up on everything. They listen to everything. Whatever you say, they going to say. Whatever you do, they going to do. So it's our job to try to educate them as much as we can because it's so much going on, man. It's like, it's so much to even talk about in this little segment we can. So it's like, we had to sit down for hours and hours and hours, just keep talking about everything that's going on in this world, man. So I just got to try to keep educating my kids, man, and just try to keep preaching to them. Like, it's going to get better, man. Cause I do feel like it's going to get better, you know, each and every day, man. So, you know, I just salute to the people who are trying to help us, man. And, you know, who the people ain't, man, just stay the away. Cause we trying to build something here that's going to separate us, you know, because 2020 already been a terrible year for everybody. People losing their jobs and everything. So it's just like, there's so much going on and on top of this police stuff that's going on. So we trying to do better in 2020. Hopefully 2021 bring us, you know, great love and peace.
All right. So that line that Cordero Patterson said about his 7-year-old coming up to him and saying, I thought Martin Luther King Jr. fixed all of this, was absolutely heartbreaking. And just that was a gut punch when he said that.
Right.
I mean, it
framed the conversation in terms of, in a way that I hadn't thought a whole lot about prior, which is having to explain it to kids. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so difficult to sort through the emotions as is, having to explain it to, you know, your kid or children who can't really understand the context or don't really, you know, have the nuance to really have these conversations, but still are impacted by it and need to have these conversations. That's its own Herculean task on itself. And then you have to go play professional football and, you know, be an ambassador for the Bears. And it's just really, days like today really make you realize and open your eyes to just how much effort and burden it takes to get through the day. And I think it's just sort of one mountain after another. It feels like that, at least.
Yeah, it does. You know, you can see how much hurt there is in these two players and in black communities across the country for there not being justice for Breonna Taylor. Let's hope there is. And let's hope that we all can continue to kind of do what David Montgomery said and continue to talk about this and push the right people to do things that are necessary to bring about the change that we so desperately need in this country and have needed for a very long time. I wanted to start the podcast with that because it's more important than football.
Yeah.
But we do have a football game to preview on Sunday with the Bears traveling to Atlanta to face the 0-2 Falcons. Currently on PointsBet, as we are recording this right now on Thursday afternoon, the Bears are +3 going into Atlanta. On the money line, the Falcons are -180. The Bears are +150. Odds are provided by our partner, PointsBet. So the Bears are going to be underdogs for the first time this year, but 3-point road dogs, kind of what you would expect.
Right.
Even if Atlanta is 0-2, and they are 0-2 in a really hilarious fashion. Yeah. the onside kick. I think I've watched it like 6 times that basically lost them the game in Dallas on Sunday, and every time I'm just like, what it looked like to me, Cam, was like, you know, the Tom Emanski commercials where you had like the four baseball players standing around in a little circle, just like batting the baseball to each other with their hands. And I don't understand the point of that drill. It looked like that, except if the ball was just sitting in the middle and no one was going for it.
I almost don't feel bad. I don't blame the Falcons almost because it's such a weird play. And everything's happened so fast, and it was just so bizarre that I don't really blame the Falcons for sort of freaking out about that in the moment. I blame the Falcons for, you know, coughing up the lead again for the 300th time on national TV in the last 2 years. But it was just so weird, and it was so weird because onside kicks aren't working otherwise this year. So it was just the most bizarre, very on par for Atlanta way to lose that game, which now I think that almost makes this is tough for the Bears because they're going to get all of Atlanta. Like, they're going to get Atlanta mm-hmm. as good as Atlanta can give it. So I'm a little bit worried.
Yeah, I think you asked Matt Nagy that question on Wednesday, just about like, hey, the Falcons are, you have to worry about them just being, you know, kind of the wounded animal back against the wall. Dan Quinn may be coaching for his job at this point early in the season. Atlanta still has a lot of firepower, though.
Yeah.
They might not have as much firepower as you may think. Currently, as we're recording this on Thursday, I haven't seen the Falcons injury report, but Julio Jones did not practice on Wednesday. He aggravated a hamstring. And, you know, this is... This is getting a little interesting. Julio Jones, by the way, on Thursday did not practice as well.
I was going to say, right as we're doing this, the practice report is out.
So there we go.
And it looks a little better, but not a whole lot.
No, I mean, if Julio Jones can't go, I don't know what like voodoo dolls Deshae Townsend has, but if the Bears in the first 3 weeks of the season don't have to go up against Kenny Golladay and Julio Jones and then get like a half game of Sterling Shepard. I mean, for as good as Jalen Johnson and Kyle Fuller have been, that is amazing luck. Holy cow. Yeah. So we'll see what the final injury report is on Friday. It'll probably be out. If you're listening to this Friday afternoon, you can check on NBCSportsChicago.com, on the My Teams app, on our Twitter timelines to see what is exactly going on in Atlanta. Also noteworthy here, Cam, Dante Fowler and Tack McKinley both did not practice again Thursday. They didn't practice Wednesday. Falcons defense, which is really not good, might be down two of their better edge rushers too.
Which was sort of the one place they had some, not talent, but that was their sort of strength of the defense, was that front seven, if you could call it a strength. And yeah, I mean, this game is almost reaching levels of Bears should win, I think, that the Giants game is, especially if the Falcons don't play the vast majority of their good players. If the Bears want to prove that they're a good team, good teams put away inferior teams. They just do. Even if it's on the road and even if the other teams are desperate, the Bears will be more talented on Sunday, I think. This is getting very close to a game the Bears should very easily walk away with.
Yeah, you know, you look at we'll start kind of on the Falcons defense because moving into there, while Matt Nagy's talking about the speed that's on this defense, as we've seen with the Oakland Raiders over a number of years, speed does not necessarily mean good
right
at football. Grady Jarrett still is a really good player playing at a really high level in the interior of that defensive line, but, you know, I'm struggling to see where the Falcons can really get an edge here. If Takaris McKinley and Dante Fowler Jr., who have 3 sacks combined this year, 15 total pressures, are not out on the field, the next up in terms of pressures outside of Grady Jarrett on this team is John, I still call it Kaminsky Park, down there with 4 pressures and no sacks.
It's not good.
No, it's not good. Bobby Massey, if this continues and McKinley and Fowler don't play, Bobby Massey has a 100% pass block win rate. It's still going to be 100% after this week.
Like, I mean, but it's literally shaping up to be the Bears versus the Falcons secondary, like second team. Like, and there's, you know, it's sort of funny that everyone's focusing on Julio Jones when Calvin Ridley's probably been better this year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it goes from Jalen Johnson having to guard either one of those to, if they wanted to hide Jalen Johnson away from Calvin Ridley, they could. So that changes so much just with one person. Todd Gurley hasn't been great this year. So the Falcons, if the Falcons weren't 0-2, I'd say this is a win that the Bears could easily walk in and get. I think there's a little bit of the wounded animal aspect to it. And maybe some breaks that the Bears have gotten for the first 2 weeks don't exactly go their way this time. They can't keep winning games on the final play or on the second to final play or whatever. But this is another, you know, their schedule looked easy at the front, and this is another easy game. So you got to win these.
Yeah, and looking at this offense, you know, this is going to sound, I don't know, do you think this is an overreaction, Cam? I was thinking about this today. If Julio plays, I think I'm going to pick the Falcons to win. If he doesn't play, I think I'm going to pick the Bears to win. Because what it came down to for me as I've been looking at this game is this worries me in that the Falcons have enough firepower to actually go downfield and score late in a game against the Bears defense. Whereas the Lions maybe did if DeAndre Swift knew how to catch a football, and the Giants did not. Ultimately in the end there, but for the Bears defense to allow those two drives to get right there at the end zone that would have lost them the game in both instances, I think the Falcons have enough to put that away. But if Julio doesn't play, I know Russell Gage is out to a really good start this year. He's got 160 yards on 15 catches. Obviously, like you mentioned, Cam, Calvin Ridley, Riley's brother, 16 catches, 239 yards, 4 touchdowns. He's just toasting people this year. He looks awesome. Yeah, if you got Julio out there too late in a game and the Falcons have to drive to win, I think they might do it. But if not, you know, I might back the Bears defense to get another close win here. I think the difference for me is probably a 23-20 Bears win or a 27-23 Falcons win, depending on Julio's status.
Yeah, I think that you're going to have to score 3 touchdowns to win on Sunday, excuse me. Mm-hmm. I worry about the Bears' defense because they didn't get, you know, people can say the Lions offense, week one, you know, about Kenny Golladay, it's an okay offense. And the Bears got torched by them, at least yardage-wise. The Giants were not good at all, and situationally, the Bears kind of got torched. So you wait to see whether they can play, how they play against a good offense. That being said, if you're going to sort of dip your toes into a higher level of competition, going against the Falcons defense is probably like a good way to minimize it, you know? Like, it's not like they're going up against the Ravens or something that they're just going to get smacked on both sides of the ball immediately. So I see this sort of like the first of bridge games into the harder part of the schedule, which I think will be good because, you know, we can gauge Jalen Johnson against elite talent. You can see how Roquan Smith plays against in coverage when he's like really pushed against that sort of stuff that looks good, but we're not quite sure right now yet. The Falcons are a good offense to test to see how good the Bears defense can actually be because it sort of feels like we don't have any idea right now.
Right. And I think, you know, even if Julio doesn't play, it still is a good test because they haven't faced a receiver the caliber of Calvin Ridley.
Right.
I'm not even sure they faced a tight end the caliber of Hayden Hurst, even with T.J. Hockenson and Evan Engram. Hayden Hurst has looked pretty good. This year he's got 8 catches, 110 yards, and a touchdown. That's going to be a really interesting one because Roquan Smith's been really good in coverage so far this year. If he can hold up against Hurst, I'm feeling pretty good about that. Danny Trevathan's still a bit of a question mark there. Cam, where do you see this game going? I've already kind of made my stake to my prediction based on Julio and all of my three keys and prediction up on Saturday on NBCSportsChicago.com. But where do you see this one going?
Yeah, I see it being a relatively close game. I think the Bears have the numbers and the talent to win. I don't think that's going to be all in question. I'm if the Bears can score 24, 27 points, I think they'll be fine. So I'm worried that they, I'll believe it when I see it, I guess. But if they can get to that, and I think their offense clicks enough to finally get a game together where they can put drives and score, I don't think the Falcons are going to test them as much as other teams will. They're not that good.
One, a couple of just sort of whimsical things to end it here. Okay. Kyle Fuller, his ascension back into being something with the Bears started against the Falcons. If anyone remembers 3 years ago when the Bears opened the season against the Falcons, Kyle Fuller wasn't even supposed to start that game. He did because Prince Amukamara wasn't healthy. Fuller had a pretty solid game. He matched up against Julio a couple times, held his own. And that's kind of where his career kind of restarted, was that game against the Falcons in week one. And then, Cam, I don't know if you remember this, but at the Combine in 2018,
okay,
Calvin Ridley was, like, thirsty for the Bears.
Oh, really?
He said that year, quote, the Bears are, quote, a team on the rise and, quote, have a great quarterback in Mitch Trubisky. He also was, like, out on Instagram dropping comments on posts that was like, you know, who would you like to see the Bears draft? And he replied in there with just like Cal. April 29th, 2017, Calvin Ridley tweeted, "Bears, come get your boy also." I think this was after the Bears drafted Eddie Jackson. They're really good friends. So Calvin Ridley, former future Bear, as it turned out.
Who would have guessed? There's a lot of Georgia UGA Bears connections this weekend. I guess less so with Leonard Floyd gone, but Roquan was asked about it. Someone else is. We got
Von Wims.
Von Wims.
Yep.
The Georgia aspect of it was a fun. It's sort of sad that they won't have any of their friends or family in the arena to watch, because there'd be like a full section of Bears people. But it's sort of a weird Bears Falcons Georgia connection happening this week, I thought.
Yeah, and it would have been, you know, probably would have been nice for Roquan Smith to have his friends and family come down to Atlanta. But yeah,
we could have gone to Varsity Dog. Wow.
What's Varsity Dog?
Oh, it's a really good hot dog place in Atlanta that's famous.
Atlanta has good hot dogs?
This one place does, yeah, it's famous. Look it up.
If I'm going to Atlanta and I'm getting fast food, I'm probably getting Zaxby's.
Oh no! This is like real. I don't know if it's, but it's not like a chain. This is like a real like Atlanta institution. At least that's what I've been told. I've never actually been there. I just every time I go there, everyone's like, "Oh, Varsity Dog, you should go there." So
I'm going to stick with Wiener's Circle, okay. Personally.
That's I will let you do that. That's fine. I don't feel that passionately enough about it to fight you on this.
If I'm not getting yelled at while I'm ordering my hot dog, I really don't want to get a hot dog.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it.
All right, we're going to end this segment of the podcast here. In the second half of the Under Center podcast, I'm going to chat with Fred Mitchell about Gale Sayers. So stick around with us here on the Under Center podcast. We'll be right back after the break.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, before we continue with this episode of the Under Center podcast, a word for St. Xavier University. St. Xavier University is for students who want more out of their future. We pride ourselves on preparing graduates with the skills they need to succeed in life. Visit sxu.edu to start plotting your path to a brighter tomorrow. St. Xavier University, the best in you. And also be sure to check out the all-new RotoWorld premium subscription packages, which have the tools and resources you need to dominate your fantasy leagues from drafts through the playoffs. Best of all, subscriptions are not just one sport. They include football, baseball, basketball, and hockey. As a listener of the Under Center podcast, you can get $10 off any annual subscription to RotoWorld Premium. To find your edge, visit rotoworld.com/edge using the promo code PODVIP10 at checkout. All right, I'm pleased to welcome to the Under Center podcast Fred Mitchell. He spent four decades with the Chicago Tribune covering a number of sports. I got to know him a little bit on the baseball beat. One of my favorite writers just from growing up and reading him, and a friend to Gale Sayers. So, Fred, thanks so much for joining me here on the Under Center podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, JJ.
You know, Gale had been in declining health in recent years. And as you interacted with him over the last, you know, years of his life, what was he still able to kind of communicate about himself and his legacy and what he wanted to be remembered for?
Yeah. So, of course, I did the book with him, Gale Sayers, My Life and Times, in 2007. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, I spent a lot of time with him there then, and his health was great at that point. And I'm so pleased that I was able to capture as much as I could at that point in his life. But in recent years, his degenerative dementia situation rendered it very difficult for him to communicate with people. He kind of went in and out in terms of recognizing people. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, it's frustrating, and anyone who's had a relative go through that knows just how heartbreaking that can be when someone kind of loses his or her memory and knowledge of the people that are close to him. But when I visited him in his home in Indiana a little over a year ago, I was able to kind of see what he's going through. He recognized me, I think, initially when he greeted me at the door with his wife. And then I think he kind of slipped away, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Periodically he would look over at me, and at one point I remember him giving me a thumbs up, which is a nice thing. And then subsequently, I would simply call the house and talk to his wife, Artie, and just to check on him, see how he was doing. He had two caregivers who came in every day, and that was a great help for them. And then she would put me on speakerphone and tell Gale that, hey, your friend Fred Mitchell is calling to see how you're doing. And then she would tell me that he's smiling. So that made me feel good.
Yeah. So I want to go back to, you know, the book you wrote about Gale Sayers, as you mentioned, My Life and Times, Sayers, Gale Sayers with Fred Mitchell. And I want to start with who Gale Sayers was. I mean, he was not, you know, he was from Omaha, the son of a car polisher and a mechanic, played his college ball at Kansas. How did Gale Sayers' upbringing shape who he was?
Yeah, well, you captured it correctly, that he grew up very poor in Omaha. He had two brothers, older brothers, and a funny a tidbit that he told me was that his mother was determined that she was finally going to have a girl. So picked out the name Gale, and lo and behold, it turns out to be a boy. And she said, I don't care, we're sticking with the name Gale. So that's how he got that name. And he says he even remembers seeing a picture of him as a baby with a bow in his hair. So that was pretty unique. But he was quite aware of the fact that his family struggled quite a bit. He said during one 8-year stretch, they moved 9 times. so that his father could get a job, just to try to provide for his family. So obviously sports played a huge role, even as a youngster, in getting him something productive and positive to do. I remember him telling me about playing flag football in grade school, for instance, and that's kind of how, you know, if you've seen or played flag football, you know how elusive you have to be to make sure someone doesn't grab your flag. So before playing tackle football, he played a lot of flag football, and they won some sort of grade school championship, and he was proud of that. He was a track star also in high school. He won the state best in hurdling and long jumping. And he said that those two skills certainly served him well in football. So if you ever saw a film of him hurdling a tackler or eluding a tackler, a lot of those moves came from that. He was recruited by, I think he said he got letters from at least 75 schools. And some of the recruiting trips were not so good in terms of how he was treated. One school, he said, he and his African-American high school teammate were on this recruiting trip, and they were made to stay in the boiler room in the basement of a dorm, and he immediately ruled that school out. So that was not a good experience. Another recruiting trip, he said he thought he was going to die on a plane trip to that school. So, and then the other thing is that he grew up in Omaha and Nebraska, and people wanted him to go to the University of Nebraska. Excuse me. And so for him to go to Kansas, it took a long time for him to sort of live that down, but it turned out to be absolutely the right decision for him. So football was big, and he had tremendous success at the University of Kansas. First round draft pick of the Bears. I think his first contract was for $25,000. And so he goes in the rookie year. Scores an NFL record 22 touchdowns in just a 14-game schedule back then, a record that still stands. And at the end of the season, you know, that was the year, of course, he scored 6 touchdowns in one game against the 49ers. And at the end of the season, George Halas rewarded him with a $10,000 bonus for having a season. And at that time, Gail was happy to get that, but I can only imagine what he would be worth with his skill set and accomplishments in today's NFL.
I think one of the coolest things, Fred, we've heard this week from talking to just people around the NFL is how everyone says Gale Sayers would have been a star in today's NFL. Yeah. You know, Falcons coach Dan Quinn said, you know, you put him out in space in today's kind of offenses and He would have been great. You know, Cordarrelle Patterson today was basically just like, yeah, he'd be good in this league. Was he kind of almost ahead of his time with the way that he ran and, you know, the whole give me 18 inches, that's all I need, and the way that he made guys miss and just his overall playing style?
Yeah, I think so. His versatility was off the charts. When you think of this age of specialization, particularly, so he was, you know, returning kickoffs, returning punts, obviously running from scrimmage, used as a receiver, and even threw a couple passes. He was left-handed, and so he truly, you know, did it all. He didn't come off the field very often. So, yeah, that skill set translates to today's game. And the other remarkable thing that we mentioned in the book is that it seems like a subtle thing, but it's really pretty big, I think, is that back then the hash marks were out, I don't know, 12 yards, I don't know the exact distance, wider than they are mm-hmm. now. The hash marks in the NFL are the width of the goalposts. So there's no real short side of the field, so to speak. Back then, there was a short side of the field. So if a guy goes out of bounds or off to the side, they put the ball in the hash, say the right hash mark, and then the short side of the field would be up to the offense's right. The defense knew that Sayers was probably going to get the ball, so they would put the majority of their players on the wide side of the field, and he'd still do a lot of damage. So if that did not exist, if that rule, that simple rule had not been what it was then, he would have been even more dangerous, believe it or not.
So back when Gale played, players didn't come back from knee injuries the way they do now, certainly. And, you know, Gale had it in 1968, I believe. Right. Comes back in 1969, leads the league in rushing yards again, but his yards per carry average dropped almost about 2 yards.
Yeah.
When you look at Gale's, the latter part of Gale's career, what impresses you about who he still was as a player, and then what stood out about how quickly his decline was?
Well, it certainly stood out that he works so incredibly hard in 1969 from such a devastating injury. And secondly, the fact that he sort of reinvented himself and realized that he didn't have the lateral movement ability that he instinctively had before and had to do more straight off tackle type running. So he, you know, adjusted by necessity in that regard. But it was just his overall determination to come back and a will to contribute. And when he felt that his ability was diminishing after the second knee injury, he felt that he was hurting the team. And that's why he chose to retire, just thinking about the team more than himself, I think.
We probably will never see a player like him again who makes the Pro Football Hall of Fame on essentially 5 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for him to be a first ballot inductee into Canton after really, again, like in 5 seasons, I know he played 2 more. How much pride did he take in not only in his career, but being a first ballot inductee?
Yeah, I think he took that as a tremendous compliment. You know, he was not a boastful person. He was confident in his abilities, but he was not boastful. And he always deferred to the fact that he had simply God-given talent, the peripheral vision, the speed, the lateral movement. He didn't take credit for that himself. He just said, I just, something I was born with. And, obviously, anybody would want to be recognized for accomplishments like he had. And I don't know how soon or how long it took for him to reconcile what happened to him injury-wise in the shortened career or not. But certainly, when I worked with him in the book, he said that everything happens for a reason. And he felt that the injury, you know, was meant to happen in terms of impacting his life. The main message in the book was the fact that that he wanted to convey to younger athletes is to prepare to quit. So his thinking was, you know, even if you're fortunate enough to make the NFL, and stick in the NFL for even 3.5, 4.5, 5 years, something like that, when you're done, you're still going to have half your life left. Mm-hmm. And you better have something constructive to do and something that you're enthusiastic about doing. So even during his playing days, of course, you know, they didn't make nearly the kind of money they make now. So most of the players had off-season jobs to supplement their income. And in his case, he learned how to be a stockbroker and, you know, had some really fruitful experiences off the field and learned some things from a lot of people. He went on and finished his degree at Kansas, got a master's degree as well, owned his own computer company in the 80s. So he's, you know, on the cutting edge of that. And of course his foundation. So all of these things he's so proud of and was really able to contribute to society in a very meaningful and impactful way, besides what everybody got to enjoy, you know, seeing with him playing football.
How much pride specifically did he take in all the philanthropy that he did? I mean, that not every player does that after their career ends. And certainly, like you said, Fred, you had to have extra jobs. It's not like these guys were making $20 million a year back then. Just to know what he came from Omaha and being poor to then become someone who was so involved in philanthropy. What did that mean to him?
Yeah, it meant the world to him. He in addition to his growing up in poverty, he had a speech impediment, which he had to the point to the day that he joined the Bears in 1965, and that contributed to him being extra quiet and some people thought aloof, but actually it had a lot to do with his speech impediment. So he worked on that and worked on it and had help with that and improved tremendously. So a good part of the foundation that he had stresses helping at-risk youth gain confidence speaking in front of a group. So he would invite me and my wife every year to their foundation dinners, and they would give out awards, introduce celebrities, and he would have young people, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old or even younger, stand up in front of a crowd of, you know, maybe 1,000 people and make an introduction and say, here's Barry Sanders and blah, blah, blah. And so this meant a lot to Gail to see young people have this experience, something that he didn't have, and gave him a great deal of pleasure.
I know a lot of people around Chicago know Gail not only as the running back from the Bears, but as Brian Piccolo's friend. Yes. And having seen Brian's song, I mean, I think I was in high school when we watched it as part of one of my English classes. And it's almost like, it's almost part of most curriculums around Chicago to watch Brian's song. What did he think of his fame from that movie? And how did Brian's song impact him as a person?
Well, he kind of joked about the fact that after his career was over and maybe someone would recognize him at an airport gate or something like that, and they would tell him, I loved your movie, Brian's song, you know, without any whole lot of reference to him being a Hall of Fame football player. Mm-hmm. And, I think he was sort of amused really liked that point. I don't, when he was going through that experience with Brian and being the first interracial roommates for a professional team, mm-hmm. I don't think at the time he thought that was a big deal. It was just, you know, two guys who happened to play the same position and would naturally be guys who would room together. So it was interesting, you know, he talked about that and he thought it was a true portrayal of what happened, and that they had contrasting personalities, kind of. So Gail was this, you know, shy, kind of stiff guy, and then Brian Piccolo comes along and he's gregarious and pulling pranks and telling off-color jokes and finally getting Gail to smile and open up. And so they appreciated each other and others' personalities and got to know each other that way. So in terms of the overall social significance that it turned out to be, I think he was very pleased and proud about that. But it was nothing that was forced or contrived or anything like that. It's just like, this is what happened. He's a football player and a teammate, and this is the way you're supposed to treat people.
How would you sum up Gale Sayers' legacy here in Chicago?
Yeah, I would say, you know, from a media standpoint, he's probably one of the humblest superstars that I ever came across. He recognized his talent and his skill. And as I said before, he just said that this is a gift that I was given, God-given gift. And really, you know, was not somebody who tried to maximize his celebrity off the playing field to gain attention and money. The things that he did were to help other people with the foundation, and a lot of things were under the radar, so to speak. But he was okay with that. And I think he's the type of player that hopefully younger people who weren't aware of him before can gain a greater appreciation for, to see that this is somebody we should know and admire and be a model for other athletes going forward, whether you know, you happen to turn out to be a superstar or not. It's just the way you should treat people and the way you should perform them to the best of your ability and be a team guy and all that. So even to the point of the game where he scores the 6 touchdowns and he's taken out late because the Bears were up big, and Hallis puts this guy, John Arnett, in the game when the Bears had the ball in the 1 or 2 yard line of the 49ers, and fans are chanting, "Sayers, put Sayers in, Sayers, Sayers." And so Arnett scores, you know, so Gale could have at least had one more touchdown. He said later, if I knew that was going to be such a big deal, I would have tried to score 7 or 8 touchdowns. But he didn't complain about the fact that he wasn't in there. He said his game was a blowout. We won. It's not about individual records. But that's, you know, fitting with his personality. That's how he should be remembered.
For anyone who's listening to this podcast who wants to learn more about Gale Sayers, I would encourage you to read My Life and Time, Sayers, the book that Fred wrote with Gale. You can still get it on Amazon on Kindle. I'm sure you can find it in some bookstores around Chicago. Fred, thanks so much for joining us here on the Under Center podcast. My condolences to you on losing a friend in Gale this week. Chicago lost a legend, and I'm really happy that you were able to come on and hopefully, you know, leave everyone with the right impression of Gale.
Right. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thanks again to Fred Mitchell for joining us here to talk about the life and legacy of Gale Sayers on the Under Center podcast. By the way, thank you to everyone who has subscribed to, downloaded, and listened to our podcast. We are over 100,000 listens of the Under Center podcast in the month of September. That is a new record for this podcast. We couldn't do it without all of you guys supporting us here on the Under Center podcast. We really enjoy it. We really enjoy your questions and comments that we get. We're going to do that every Tuesday, ask for those, and then put those out on Wednesday for a weekly podcast segment that we're going to do between Cam and myself. Again, just thank you to everyone. We've got a lot of momentum on this podcast, and we're going to keep it up. So keep subscribing to us, rating us, reviewing us, wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. We are there. We're also on the My Teams app, which you should download today to listen to this podcast while you're reading all of our Bears coverage from myself, Adam Hoge, and Cam. We're going to be doing everything we usually do leading up to, during, and after the Bears-Falcons game on Sunday. I'm going to have my usual post-game column on Sunday, Bears grades coming out on Monday. Adam's got his 10 Bears things that'll come out early next week. Cam is going to do his outstanding overreactions post to whatever happens on Sunday in Atlanta. We're also going to have a fresh Under Center podcast for you Monday morning from myself, Cam, and David Kaplan, looking at everything that happened on Sunday in Atlanta. Until then, for Cam Ellis, I'm JJ Stankovic. We'll talk to you next time here on the Under Center podcast, brought to you by St. Xavier University.